story.
What? Translate that?
Barbara?
Oh, yeah.
Are you behaving yourself?
Oh.
Okay.
I'm going to try to behave myself, yeah.
If you want to look at Kelly, the camera's right up there.
Oh, there you go.
Everybody's looking at you in the big screen.
Yeah.
We're enjoying the novelty, Kelly.
Yeah. can you show us the beach?
Yeah. I was surprised there is no beach. I was talking with him. I thought so, too.
Hello. Or the apartment.
Oh.
There you go.
Very good. There you go. Okay, well, Kelly, we wrote you down on the roster because you are essentially here with us. So we do have a quorum, which is, and thank you, everybody, for coming in today. Appreciate it.
So are you going to call it to order, or should I? Kelly?
You can do it.
Oh, I can do it?
You can do it.
Okay, meeting call to order. Should we just roll around the table real quick? Roll call. Introduce yourself. Starting with Leanne.
Leanne Mass.
Jack Mize, Corporate Public Works.
Adam Abuka.
Greg Foster.
Marcia Keene.
Steve Duke, Conservation Techniques.
Gene Athers, Conservation Techniques.
Jeff Knighton with Clark County Community Planning.
Barbara Anderson.
Bill Bierke, Clark County Parks Manager.
Jeremy King, Clark County Parks.
You. How do we know who you are, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess we'll just, first of all, thank everyone for making it today. And I hope you enjoyed having the doodle poll. I can't tell you what a wonderful, warm feeling it was for Kelly and I to be able to look and see exactly who was going to be here and to know that we did have a quorum. So thank you very much. And if no one has a better suggestion, I think we'll continue to do this for future meetings. Any objection?
No. No.
Great. And we'll turn it over to Jean.
Okay, great. Can you upload the PowerPoint?
So just to be clear, is this a workshop?
Is that this right? Is a workshop, so you don't need to take minutes.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes. We should have no... Because we didn't have time to notify the public. Okay. So we can't do any real business decision making.
Oh, okay.
It's an information gathering learning session.
Sweet. I love those.
Me too.
I can relax.
It allows us to focus on what we need to focus on.
All right, so while Bill is orienting this a little bit, this is a summary of a lot of the material that we use to establish need and demand for those facilities throughout the park system that don't have an established standard and level of service that we then do with the quantitative analysis. So as you recall, during the last more serious work session for the Parks Comp Plan, we looked at level of service, we looked at where the gaps were, and we did that quantitative assessment of where the park system was at this point. We'll be doing a lot of the qualitative, community-based assessments and analysis as we get more public information. And so part of this is the analysis of that the known data that is national, state, and local on what are the trends, what are people doing, what are they using, how are their preferences established or revealed through different surveys, different counts, that sort of thing. What I have not included in this, which will be covered in one of our next sessions, is our sports fields and sort of programmatic sports and the sports infrastructure within the county and the trail system. So this is looking at a whole lot of other forms of data to try to help inform us as to what some of our priorities should be. Okay, so I'm going to hit that one. So we went through that adopted standard, that level of service. Now we're going to look at a lot of this other material, as I just said. Next slide, please. And then we'll be talking about today some of the specifics of our public engagement and where we are now. That'll be at the end of this. So some of the things that we look at in this process, and for all of you, by the way, this PowerPoint presentation, you either have or will have by the end of the day, a digital version of it, so you can go back and refer to it if you'd like, so you can have it. I didn't want you to get distracted by looking at it and taking notes while we're just talking about it, because we really want to get sort of the big picture and the overall trends and impressions to move through. So there are a number of different sources that park planners turn to when they're looking at this information and gathering this information. One of the major ones on recreation is the National Survey on Recreation and Environment. That was last done in 2012, and the federal government is no longer supporting it. So future data from that particular survey will not be available. So, but 2012 is pretty recent. That gives us a lot of information on how people are being active and being active outdoors, anything that is environmentally related. And I'll go through some summaries from all these different reports, but I wanted to give you sort of a quick smattering of some of the sources of this data that we're going to be looking at. Sporting Goods Association, the Outdoor Industries Association, Trust for Public Land, and then a very recent study that just came out in January, done by the state of Washington, paid for by the Recreation Conservation Office. They hired Earth Economics to produce a study on specifically on outdoor recreation in the state of Washington. And a lot of that data confirms a lot of the other national trends and the state trends and the past trends that we've had through the State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, which is commonly referred to as the SCORP. So, hit the next one. So this recent plan that just came out, actually this month, it gives us some pretty good overviews. And in the actual written report of the comprehensive plan, you'll have a lot of this in much more detail. But I just want to give you sort of the bigger picture now and summarize it. So one of it is, how much do people spend time outdoors? And some past public surveys have basically said that one of the top reasons why people love living in Washington is that they have access to outdoor recreation. Doesn't mean they always have time, but on average, 56 days a year, they're spending outdoors. And if we think about Mount Royal and Columbia Sportswear, there's no bad weather, only bad clothing, so that's just not here. So anyone else who has a cell phone, if you want to turn the setting to airplane mode, that won't interfere with Kelly. Thanks.
Sorry, Kelly.
One of the interesting things that this recent analysis showed is the expenditures in recreation. Still with us, Kelly? Maybe.
You can see him, but
he can't hear us.
We might have you on mute here, Kelly.
It's a frozen picture.
He's moving the camera. He's moving. He's moving now.
We don't have our connection on there.
I think we're about to reconnect.
He's moving.
We should see his
face. Oh, I see. You don't see his face.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Okay, so while Leanne's messing with that, one of the things that it also revealed was that recreation that was associated with water-based recreation, was where the highest expenditures were. And that's primarily because if you think about motorized boats, trailers, that starts to get into really high expenses.
You're talking about expenses for the user.
For the user, yes. Well, and for economic benefit overall. How much are people spending in the local economy and in the regional and state economy on things that relate to their outdoor recreation?
I just want to make sure you weren't talking about the taking care of the water rights and things.
No.
We're not there. Okay.
But if you're thinking about how do you tie your public expenditures to your economy, you might want to say, well, you know, we really should pay more attention to our public access to our waterways and making sure our waterways are clean, because it's driving the economy. So some of these things are going to give us some hints about where our priorities should be. And you remember one of your goals was enhancing access to waterways. And that's a pretty key one based on the water trail and on the fact that we've got all these waterways surrounding and going through Clark County. So it makes a good tie to economic benefits and effects. The other thing that was pretty high on the outdoor recreation environmental or economic effect was special events, live sports tournaments, particularly where there's fees, where they're generating overnight stays. And I don't know that the tournaments here generate overnight stays.
Absolutely.
If we've tied, have we been able to do any studies relative to, you know, what it's generating?
Softball tournaments bring in people from all over the area. All over the area.
3-4 day regattas where people are coming in from around the country.
Yeah, regattas definitely would.
The big paddle festival, International Paddle Festival in Washougal, that brought a lot of people in for 3 or 4 days.
And those new courts, I was surprised at the statistics they gave us.
Okay, so some of the things to think about is, are we gathering that data so that we can make an argument for how different expenditures should be made or how much money should be allocated in a budget? If we aren't keeping tabs of it, there's that saying, if you don't count, you don't count. So just, you know, put that one in your back burner and think about it. If we have all these special events, can we quantify what it's bringing to the county and to the region in terms of economic value? That's a key piece for parks. So, and then the other part that they mentioned was that local parks are the place where people go and it's the most affordable thing that they can do. It may not generate as much in terms of economic impact, but it's their least costly destination. So now we're looking at a range of economic value and service to a community, you know, in terms of that demographic, economic demographic.
Do you know what being meant by the term local parks? Whether that's neighborhood parks or regional or all of the above?
So local parks would be the local jurisdiction.
Oh.
So for us, it could be our regional park, it could be our community park. It's not that class. It's not split up in that classification. Okay, next one. All right, so one of the interesting things, and I'm not going to read this to you because you can read it yourself. One of the interesting things they found out was that an element in this economic analysis that relates to outdoor recreation is that it has the tendency to transfer wealth and the expenditure of money to benefit rural communities, because primarily people are going out and recreating in rural environments on public lands, and the dollars are coming from urban populations. So when we think about, well, if you're thinking about the rural community in Clark County and how maybe they express themselves, the residents express themselves saying, we don't care about parks and, you know, building up parks or building up opportunities for outdoor recreation because we're out in the county and it doesn't affect us. Critical missing link there in terms of people travel out to those regions to go hiking, to go fishing, to go biking, to do OHV, to camp, you name it. That's a significant effect of the economic
benefit. Sorry, what's OHV?
Off-highway vehicles.
Oh.
So, okay. You know. Four-wheelers and three-wheelers, dirt bikes and whatever, equestrians, et cetera. A lot of those activities and the money they're putting into it is actually benefiting rural populations and rural environments. So there's this interesting transfer of wealth in the process. So again, we've got both rural and urban communities we're serving, and the economic impact has a tendency to help with both communities. So. That's an important piece. So then, we know some other things that this economic study also reaffirmed. And there are numerous other studies that have told us this across the nation and across these different sort of values. And that is that most people express a higher quality of life when they have access to recreation, to outdoor recreation, to parks, trails, open space. You can talk to realtors about this. You can talk to you know, the local tourism folks, you can talk to businesses and corporations looking to relocate. They want that those communities that have this better quality of life. So improved physical health as well, which leads to lower health care costs. If you talk to a lot of public safety officers, police, PAL, the court system, they'll basically say, if you've got programs for youth sports and programs for youth and after-school programs, there's a definite correlation with reduced crime. So these kinds of economic contributions aren't just those direct contributions of, oh, we spent money going paddling. Or we spent money here at Jensen paying the fees and playing sports and, you know, staying in a hotel. So there are a lot of these indirect but directly related kind of economic values in terms of your community. Reduced work absenteeism, that probably doesn't count for me because I tend to go out and play more than I want to actually be at work, but that's my own issue. And then the whole environmental contribution and ecosystem services. Clean water, clean air, that sort of thing. So what the basic point is that investment in outdoor recreation is going to yield tremendous results, and it's both direct results and indirect results in the community. Next. So here's another result of one of the studies that we looked at, and this has to do with overall recreation. This is from Recreation Management Magazine, and this is their 2013 report. And they listed the facilities that most of the park and recreation providers were likely to invest in, the physical infrastructure they were likely to invest in. And these were the top five of what people thought they were going to be spending money on in the next 5 or 6 years.
Is that in order?
They didn't say it was in order. They just said these are the key ones. So some of the other studies that we looked at, where we looked at what did people really want and what did they do the most of, would order this a little differently. It would order this: trails would be at the top, playgrounds would be second, and then these others would fall in a lot of different orders. And we'll see that in the results of a couple other studies. So again, this is giving us some feedback on these general trends that we may want to apply to our ranking and our prioritization in the capital facilities plan. And in our goals in the comp plan.
You mentioned you were going to be talking about sports fields impacts in a later mm-hmm. date. So is that not considered in this at all then? Because I would think that sports facilities would be excluded, because they would certainly be on that list.
Yeah, I'm not sure in this particular report where they put that one.
Okay. So it would probably come under park structures and, you know.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Park structures
I would find it hard to believe that sports fields is not
it's
a
big,
high, it's not
it's
a huge
field.
One in a lot of these developments.
Yeah, good point. Also, when you have the full written report, you'll have all the footnotes and all the other little pieces, so... I'm not remembering the highlight, to your point, Greg, whether or not they made a specific statement. We weren't counting sports fields in this one or not.
Quick question. The Recreation Management Magazine, where mm-hmm. is that nationwide?
Yes.
That's a nationwide magazine. Okay.
It's an industry association magazine, basically.
Okay.
Okay, now, so that was sort of some of the national trend. Now we're boiling down to Washington State. The Washington State, the statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan, nicknamed SCORP, is done on a six to ten year basis, depending on whether or not the state has money. It is a requirement that every state has an up-to-date comprehensive outdoor recreation plan in order to be eligible for federal funds. They have to show that they're up to date on what the trends are, what the needs are, what the demands are, before they're allowed to have this federal money that then can come down to us, like the LWCF money, the Land and Water Conservation Fund money, and other sources of revenue from the federal government. So it also helps to have this score of outline for any state dollars to be able to say, well, these are our priorities. So when we're ranking applications for grants for state dollars, we also know how they should be allocated based on what the need and demand is. So this score gives us a whole other set of data about what are the trends, what are people doing, what are they like, how are they spending their time, what keeps them from spending time doing different things. The primary activity that most everybody does is walk. So if you're thinking about the different types of outdoor recreation amenities you need to do, providing places where people can walk is huge. And that's not just relative to parks, but that can be relative to community development and creating more walkable neighborhoods. One of the issues we found when we were developing the specific neighborhood parks and community parks in the greater Clark Park District was local residents were concerned if they didn't have sidewalks in their neighborhood. How are they going to get to this nice, beautiful neighborhood park safely if they can't walk it? So you don't want to have to necessarily drive to be able to walk. But it happens to a lot of us just because of the way development patterns work. But Even so, even with that whole walkability issue, walking is that primary activity that pretty much covers all ages, genders, and demographic characteristics. So 90%, pretty pervasive. So in the Scorpus reports, they gave some recommendations to local jurisdictions and park and recreation providers about what they saw in terms of patterns and what you should be doing as an overall set of goals. Creating new partnerships. Now remember, this is now 2013, 2014, and we've gone through a recession. We've gone through times when most park and recreation providers have had their budgets cut and they've gone through layoffs, and the economy kind of made a serious dip in terms of real estate values and everything else, you know, people's jobs being eliminated, et cetera. So creating new partnerships was one of those brass rings that you're grabbing onto to say, can we provide maybe some synergy or some added value by forming partnerships with others and making a link?
Just lost.
So that's a biggie. Let's pool resources. Let's get together. You know, how can we help?
So basically, similar kinds of partnerships with regard to who?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, well.
Partnerships with.
Okay, so partnerships could be across different park and recreation providers. So it could be like the Blue Ribbon Commission tried to do that, where let's bring in all the cities and their park and recreation and collaborate. So Battleground and Ridgefield, they collaborate on some after school and different school play recreation stuff because they don't really have resources individually to fully do that. That would be one example. So, and school districts and park providers do lots of programs where they're sharing. Boys and Girls Clubs.
Miracle League?
Yeah. Well, Miracle League. So there are a lot of different ways you can do partnerships. Trail groups, volunteer groups. So it can be across nonprofits, and it can be businesses, a dock in parks. So there are a lot of different ways. So basically, the Recreation Conservation Office and this SCORP plan says, do more of it. This is a good thing. It's going to help you get further with your resources and pool your resources.
Cool.
Then the phrase, take care of what you have, recurred over and over again. And it's been the case in Clark County, it's been the case in the City of Vancouver, it's been the case across a lot of jurisdictions, both in the Portland-Vancouver metropolitan area and in the Pacific Northwest, is let's take care of what we have before we do too much more new, extra, if we have limited resources. So the maintenance of existing parks and recreation facilities, it continues to have these funding challenges, and they continue to have more use. Populations are still growing. They're getting more use. They have less funds to take care of it. That's a bigger gap. It's kind of a structural gap that's happening. So that's a serious challenge. John?
In street services,
mm-hmm.
Common wisdom is that if you don't spend your 100 grand to do an overlay now, you're going to spend a million to replace the roads down the line.
Yes.
Is it that dramatic with parks? And obviously, if you don't maintain a paved trail, it's going to be a similar. But how does that work with now? Is there a standard or a?
So one of the challenges that I found is that. Quantifying that as clearly as engineers do is much harder for parks to do. Not because the facilities couldn't be done that way, but because they don't often have the staffing and the control of their inventory to have been able to say, this is the life cost of this particular asset, this playground. If we don't take care of it, then in 20 years it'll have to be completely replaced. If we take care of it, it'll last 30 years. They don't often have even a handle on that. Steve, you want to add something?
Well, I think a different way to look at it with regard to park maintenance is if you're not maintaining it, you risk the potential perception of poor maintenance, low quality, and risk. And it's that perception that can erode the user's confidence in the department, in the facility, and in the city or county in terms of how they fund, how they maintain, which then trickles down to lack of willingness to pay for more later. So it's like you have to definitely maintain a high level of quality. It's just hard to quantify specifically like you do
safety broken windows concept. So yes. Where the park is huge if that's right.
And on playgrounds for liabilities, if the decking is wearing out, if the bolts are coming loose, you know, your risk management is not as controlled.
I don't want to interrupt, but can we take a second and try to get our technical problems?
Tell you what he needs to do, Billy. He needs to mute his microphone until he needs to talk, and then he needs to turn it on.
Okay. Mute his microphone.
Billy, can you hear us?
No, I didn't.
Could you mute your speaker, please? Mute your microphone. Yeah, he needs to mute his microphone.
Would you be able to mute your speaker?
Your microphone.
I'm sorry, your microphone?
Sure.
And then, we can repeat that.
When you want to speak, I think it's an airplane.
Well,
I'm
happy
to.
Oh,
that's what it sounded like coming.
Okay. So
it's
still not muted, but
if you can hear, yeah.
Yeah. If you're
just turn it on when you need to speak.
Yeah. If you're able to mute your microphone and then just take it off mute when you want to say something. Want to try that?
No, as I mute things, I lose your voice.
Oh, you don't want to mute your speaker. Don't turn your volume.
Don't mute the speaker, just the microphone.
Just the microphone, yeah.
And you could do that in preferences, system preferences, probably.
Hey, Kelly, speaking of preferences, would you rather look at the screen or would you rather watch Gene in the group?
I can watch Gene in the group better than the screen. Keep going.
Okay. All right, so let's see. Yeah, maintenance of facilities. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
We don't always have a good handle on it, but there's a tremendous risk. As you start to have your funding cut, there are lots of things you put off in terms of capital repairs, and that means you have, you know, gradual degradation of things that should have been fixed.
So is there in so forgive me for, since I have no clue.
Yes.
So is there in the budget, in the system, within Clark County that has, or that might be implemented later, that says, hey, this is for a rainy, not just a rainy day, but okay, here's the general fund, but here is a fund that we use for...
Yes, we have a real estate excise tax fund that we're desperately trying to hang on to right now. In past years, on a biennial basis, we've been given $600,000 to use for capital repairs, okay, replacement, so when we had, like a tree came down and cut a shelter in half, you know, we had a $40,000-$50,000 repair. That's what that fund was for,
right,
or to replace pavement in parks, or to do even ADA improvements within parks,
yeah,
you know, to stay in compliance. That's what that fund is used for. And as of this year, we've actually initiated that fund for the Greater Clark Parks District fund, or the MPD fund. So we're actually putting money away. So, for instance, Luke Jensen here, in about 10 years, we have to replace that synthetic turf at probably a cost of about $700,000. So 10 years from now, we'll actually have money to make that repair or that replacement at that time and not have to, you know, stress out and try to, you know, take the maintenance dollars away to do that activity. So our challenge right now is trying to hang on to the real estate excise tax fund, which is general fund based, and it's being used for debt service right now. And so we've got some meetings scheduled for this next month to do our level best to try to convince our counselors and our public administrator to hang on to that fund and keep it dedicated towards parks maintenance, because it is our lifeblood. Without that fund, we would literally have to raid our maintenance fund, which we just couldn't do that. It's not sustainable.
Okay. Does that grow every year?
Nope.
It's set
at $600,000 for a biennium, so $300,000 per year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so, and so it's been a lifesaver. Jeremy's been responsible for expending that fund, and he spends almost every dime over the 2-year period. So it comes in handy.
I think part of that question is, if we'd had a major problem, a flood or something that takes in up to the fourth plain area, you know,
FEMA.
It just happened in the
FEMA,
past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no money really put aside for anything major like that.
Not that big, no. I shouldn't say that. More recently, we've got we've had a tree that came down and wiped out Alder Shelter and completely obliterated it. We're going through our risk management group. They're actually paying for the replacement.
So we're working on the insurance side then?
We are, yes.
Is the county self-insured?
Yes. Well, our initial investment is $50,000. Anything above that goes towards insurance, and it's an aggregate amount. So if there's a countywide incident, and there's several different incidents, that all adds up to be within the same claim. That's the idea. So we do have a parachute, if you will.
Well, the key thing there is that was a tree that came out because of the storm. It could have been a failure of an asset, and that risk would have covered it correctly.
I had a new roof because of that storm, so I'm aware of what they will and what they will not do.
We're calling that a repair, not a complete replacement, even though that's essentially what it is, because you got to tear it down to bring it back up to code. But I don't know if they have the criteria there, Jeremy.
Oh, like the septic system failed out there.
That's a good point. Out at Lewisville Park, they had a septic system fail right in the middle of summertime. Oh. And for the bathhouse, which is the main use area. And that was how many thousands? $58,000, I think, to replace that? About $58,000. And we used the real estate excise tax capital repair fund for that. So it's there for us, and we hope we can hang on to it for this next biennial period. So, but it is definitely cheaper to repair as you go along than to replace. A good example is Stockford Village Park. Stockford Village Neighborhood Park, we're replacing the play equipment this year. We're going up for a $10,000 grant, but it's about a $100,000 replacement. It's about a 30-year-old play system, and it's just too outdated, too far gone. It's not ADA compliant, so we're going to go after it this year. But it is $100,000. Maintenance annually for that playground was, we replaced decks. We've done all kinds of stuff. We probably spend maybe $2,000 to $3,000 a year. So you can see that ongoing maintenance does sustain the life of the asset.
Okay, good. All right. So the third thing that the SCORP revealed in terms of key issue was the issue of public access, and that increasing public access is always a concern for park and recreation providers. We've talked about that as a goal for the waterways, so that's one thing. Can you increase that public access so people can enjoy the water trail or the lake or wherever it is? As we're starting to look at undeveloped parks, getting them developed, that's increasing public access to a system of parks, trails, and open space by increasing the service areas that we're covering. So this can cover a lot of different types of activities and tasks and improvements, but as an overarching goal or issue, this whole issue of increasing public access and managing public access, that's nationwide. I mean, it's federal lands and state lands still have that same issue. So you want to try to keep things open and accommodate this diverse group of people. And you may have hardships with that if you don't have the funding to maintain what you've got, and even to expand what you have as your population expands. So the need grows. So the next sort of summary of results was from that community survey that was done in November 2013, and that was of the unified system before city-county split. And some of the things that it told us, and we know this was not a statistically accurate survey or reliable survey, of the people who took the survey, 96% were park users, 83% were trail users. This comes to another point Marcia's made of what about the people who don't use parks? One of the answers was they don't have enough time. That was their primary barrier to not using parks. So we know there's an audience out there that maybe haven't answered the survey. But a lot of these same surveys are coming in very similar to what the national surveys have given us. And a lot of those were statistically accurate, and what the state surveys have given us, which also had a lot of polling that was statistically accurate. So even though this one isn't, we can get a pretty good feel of what its level of accuracy is and reliability. So highest ranked facility was walkable parks, and typically having trails and playgrounds within it, places to rest and maybe sports courts, something to do. Okay. Generally, people used parks, I didn't correct that one, you can see Bill, over 12 times a year. I needed to take you the X off of that per year or something. I didn't quite get that one right. 67.5%
are out there and using these facilities. Now, think, how does that compare with that other statistic we had? 56 days a year, and I'm forgetting what the other one was about. How many people, anybody memorize numbers like this? 56 days a year, and maybe I didn't give you that number, so that's why I can't think of it. The importance of having a park or a trail within walking distance was pretty important for most people. Well over the majority, 89%, think that that's a pretty critical piece. And that's something, again, we'll be evaluating when we say, where are the gaps? Where should parks be added? How much coverage should there be? You know, should it overlap? Is a half mile right? Too long, too short? And that will be part of our little internal PAB assessment of where do you guys live? Do you walk there? Do you know if your neighbors walk or not walk to some of the parks in your area?
My dogs walk themselves down.
No, that's pretty good.
No, it isn't. It's not supposed to
be
out.
I was going to say, do they have leashes on? No, these dogs have leashes.
They take the bus.
Yeah, I love that.
Dog that takes the bus. Okay, a couple other things from that community survey. The most valued park amenities were hiking and biking trails. So trails are coming in again. If we've got, you know, more than 90% of people, you know, preferring that walking is their main activity, it makes sense to provide the infrastructure for them. So the second rank was children's play structures, and the third was access to waterways and to picnic shelters. They were kind of tied. So give us a place to go and paddle and boat and fish and swim, but also because the summers might be hot and we want to gather, give us a covered picnic shelter. Or if you were out in the park right now, you might want a covered picnic shelter since it's pouring rain. So the survey also said, if there were additional revenues, what would you spend it on? So this wasn't the ranking where it said if you had $100, how would you allocate it and what would your priorities be? This basically said if you have additional money, what would you do? Developing and building more parks and developing and building more trails. Both of those things. Let's get the connections. Let's get the coverage. Let's increase access for people to get to parks and trails.
But basically you're saying then that those first three are the ones that were designated as being the most important, right? And that this,
the most
if we have more money, if we get
yeah.
the money for parks in one pile here,
right.
we take care of those first three things
yeah.
first. Okay, and then the last, then if there's anything left over after we've done that, then we go into the...
Yeah, now, so this was this non-statistically valid survey, and whenever you ask these questions, you can ask questions a lot of different ways. And depending on what you put in the question, whether you've put sports fields in or artificial turf, you know, all season, all year round, playable surfaces, all these rankings come out differently depending on how you word that question and what the choices are. So, grain of salt with all of this, you know, to just sort of feed into your system of, I wouldn't say that any one of these should be the golden calf or the, you know, the prize at the end or the treasure, because it's always going to be more than that. So,
any one of the three?
Any one. Well, the only item that I've seen that has repeated itself over and over again, and Kelly will like this, is people like to walk, and across the generations and types and whatever, we walk.
Yeah.
And it's very healthy, and we need places to walk. So trails within parks, trails connecting parks, sidewalks connecting parks, regional trails covering the county. That has ended up being high on most lists across local, regional, state, and national trends and data results. So
then we should be concentrating our efforts, according to this, more in the maintenance area and in keeping these things, children's play structures, et cetera, constantly up to snuff and not worrying so much about developing new parks at this point in time. You know, is that what this is telling us? To my mind, it's saying take care of what you've got or improve what you have before you move on to doing other things.
No? Or keep doing what you're doing, because apparently they like, you know, people like walking, so right. make walking paths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
in other words,
like
that's where you should put your financial
right,
efforts.
Right.
Yeah.
Do what people are already enjoying doing.
And when you're talking about keeping it maintained, it's sort of a duh. Of course you go and keep it maintained, but the question is to what level?
Yeah.
Sadly I think it's what's the minimal level that we have to maintain them to in order to
I think that, yeah, what was important is I think it's to make sure that you have the funding to maintain what you've got, and then focus on the future and expand out, because there's definitely a need for people to want to have more parks around their place to have to be able to walk through. But, you know, that's the challenge that we face right now, is that, you know, are we able to maintain 10 years out from now with the GCPD fund, all the parks that we've built so far, you know, so we're doing these projections. And the plan is right now, I think I talked to you all about that, we've got a bunch of general fund parks that were shifted over into the GCPD. Over the next few years, we're going to try to roll those out so we can continue building out the rest of the parks that were slated. And so, obviously, we want to protect what we've got, you know, make sure we maintain it to a certain level, you know, that people are very satisfied with, because that does end up on the survey results, because there's a specific question asking, you know, how do you feel about your parks? You know, how do you feel about the cleanliness of your parks? You feel safe, all that kind of stuff. You know, and I think Parks Maintenance is doing a good job. So that's really important feedback for us. You know, so is a critical role is to maintain these sites that once we bring them on to our asset list, that we maintain them at a safe level, and then we look forward.
And so to your point, I think there are two different focal points that we have. One is making sure that you have ongoing budgetary resources to maintain what you have. Yeah. Absolutely. But the purpose of the comprehensive plan is that to then look at, let's plan for our future because our community is growing, and the purpose of the comprehensive plan is to say, let's look to the future. What's our 6-year plan? What's our 20-year plan? What should we be doing to accommodate? What are our priorities? So it's almost like you've got two different boats you're traveling down. Yeah. They both need to be adequately considered, weighed against each other. And when you're looking at that 6-year plan and that 20-year plan, if you know what your resources are going to be for taking care of what you have, that's going to need to increase if you're going to increase the assets you're managing. So they go hand in hand. They're not exclusive of either one, and they have to sort of, you know, be given that consideration.
But as you develop the plan, I think what this is telling you is that we really want to be sure that the items, that the first three items that are there, are the higher ranked items in this area for, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, and at that point in time, then we start looking at building and developing. We can build and develop as long as there's money there, but we don't want to take maintenance funds, basically, to build new parks.
Absolutely.
And we already know that this money is not available. We don't have maintenance money, so we have to figure out a way to make this a priority and still drag this along behind us. But I think for a long time it has been the mindset that we have to develop more parks. We just have to keep, you know, putting up fences and mowing grass. And I'm not so sure that's been a good thing, because I happen to have seen and still see lots of parks that are not on an equal level of maintenance, or don't have any facilities, or don't have any, you know, and I'm one of those people that wants to have parks where kids can just go in the woods, so don't misunderstand me, but I think this has to be a priority, and I think we have to say that in the plan, so that that's very clear, so that those coming along behind us, because they're going to come along behind me a lot sooner than they are you, but they understand. That's why we made these our priority, because these things are the most important. So I hope that that's what comes out of it.
So is there in addition to the piggy bank, if you will, for maintenance, there's maintenance and then there's refurbishing, right? Is there like another, an account that basically holds, so I don't know how the budget works with the county. Is it you receive a lump sum that will cover that year specifically? Is that?
We receive a budget for a 2-year period.
Or it's
a biennial budget.
Okay.
And we have two budgets essentially. That is for general fund parks. That's one budget. Mm-hmm. So that's outside the urban unincorporated area, so the rural area, if you will. And then we have the GCPD budget, and that is for the unincorporated urban area.
Is it possible to? In addition, is it?
I think what you're asking is there a separate fund for
future projects?
For future,
right? Where are we saying, all right, we're gonna, you know, we want a big facility like this, you know, or something much grander that says, you know, within 10 years, you know, or within 20 years, we hope to have enough money in that kitty to be able to purchase this. Mm-hmm. This thing outright. I mean, is that kind of...
Yes, and then we call that's our park impact fee fund, and that's that map over there. We have the 10 park impact fees, the far one over there.
Right.
And that is that's dedicated funding for acquisition and development. And we bring monies in through development.
Right.
And it gets loaded into those 10 districts. Actually, we only have five now. But that's a source for revenue. Grants is another source for revenue,
right,
which is the driving purpose of why we're here today,
right,
because we want to become grant eligible.
I guess that's where it's all separate, right? So it's all the individual districts.
Yes.
That basically acquires all the money over time.
Right.
And then you can spend
money collected in each district gets spent in that district.
Okay.
And I'm assuming with the REITs and everything else, it's use it or lose it. They're not, if you don't use your full 600K, it's just staying in the REIT fund.
It goes,
and you get another 600 next year. It's not like it's adding up.
Right, okay. Exactly. The only one that adds up is our GCBD fund. That we can bank that.
So I guess that kind of gave through me for a curve. Then we really aren't trying to say for the Clark County, this is what our priorities are. What we're really trying to say is if we're looking at grant money, then we're going to be looking more at developing and building more parks, because your grant money is not going to come in to do maintenance.
No,
you're right.
No, it's not.
And I like
that.
Well, one of the reasons why we go through this process of trying to figure out what the priorities are and how to look at a 6-year plan and a 20-year plan is so that you're very intentional about what can we afford to add to the system.
Right.
Do we have the money to build it?
Right.
And in adding something to the system, will we have the revenues on a biennial budget basis to maintain it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a critical piece of, you're not going to build it if you can't maintain it. And that's why the GCPD was formed in the first place. They had money to build stuff and no money to maintain it.
I know that. Yeah.
So, it's measured out and carefully looked at in terms of what are the revenues, what's the capacity for not just developing it, but making sure that once developed, the entire system isn't going to suffer because, oh gosh, now we have too many. Okay, so that's a key part of how this process works.
Ouch.
Well, the only confusion that I have is that you talk about your tax excise.
Real estate excise tax.
For use for maintenance. But then in the same breath, you talk about having to go to the counselors and people to basically beg the use of that fund. Or maybe it's going to be taken and used for something else as if it's a general fund. So my question would be, if this money is set aside, $300,000 a year, and when I was in the military, we had a set budget in the squadron for gasoline, and we damn well had that spent by the end of the fiscal year because we knew if we didn't, we're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, I think, pretty obvious here. What do we have to do to ensure that that is balanced zero at the end of the fiscal year and we've used it on maintenance?
I just let Jeremy identify our projects, and we project out our projects to how many years out ahead for the ones that are known.
Right.
And so we see things that are infrastructure that's running down that needs to be replaced within a certain time frame.
So we are actually utilizing all those funds.
Absolutely.
That is all.
Yep.
Okay.
We bring it back down to zero.
The misunderstanding I had
there
was that there was some conversation going on with the counselors on having to be able to access those funds.
Well,
we got three different things going on. So in 1960, we had close to $1 billion in repairs that we've identified.
Right.
So there's that aspect. But the other part is that everybody's buying for this REIT funding that's RCW governed and for designated purposes. Steve and Gene probably explain it better than I, but we're all buying for this one pot of money. And so they deem what's appropriately or prioritize how it's allocated.
There's a few different REIT funds that are out there. There's Urban REIT. There's a regional REIT, which is the one that we're talking about, that's $300,000 per year. And then we have some kind of economic development REIT. All the REIT right now is being used for debt service to pay off the buildings that have been built over the last 10 years or so. And so trying to pay those buildings off, and some of them are actually getting close. I think one is due up next year. But that's what we're competing against. We want these buildings paid off. And so the only...
The only REIT fund that is not being used for debt service is our capital repair fund, and we are desperately trying to hang on to that, so we have to continually justify that money. And so that's why we have to go to the councilors, at least every biennium, to make sure that that fund is well justified, that they give it to us, so we can continue to use it. So we've been lucky for the last quite a few years now, but this is a year that was pretty scary, because as of right now, we don't have that fund. So we got to go to the spring supplemental and ask for it. And so that's what we're up against. So.
And if you go pre-recession, there was a lot of real estate growth. So this fund was pretty healthy. And Parks was a major recipient of a lot of the dollars. And that helped fund a lot of repairs and capital projects. Well, then we took the dive, and now everybody needs something. And so debt service, you got to pay your debt. So that's a pretty biggie. And it's tougher when the funds aren't there. In years past,
REIT is actually considered a public share component of the park impact fees. So you're not supposed to use 100% park impact fees to build parks. You're supposed to share it with the public share aspect of it. And so grants and REIT is also utilized for acquisition and development. However, the REIT fund is really strapped right now. So.
And I think Gene made a real good point about the big picture here, what happened. We were doing fine before the recession. The economy crashed. The property wasn't being sold. The REIT receipts dived way down. What did the county do? Well, the Board of County Commissioners back then, our Board of County Councilors basically said, we have priorities, and we have the priorities in this order. Number one, pay your bills, pay your mortgage. Number two, take care of what you have. Number three, make targeted investments. We're seeing a rebound in some of those revenues.
Mm-hmm. We are, yes.
And so can we clarify a little bit? Because my understanding was, and I heard you say that the REIT was something that you get $600,000
for biennium.
And that you use every 2 years and you go. I thought when I was reading the distribution of REIT, that when you sell a home, that there is this tax, this real estate excise tax, and that out of the X percent, it's designated this, 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 and this, and that Parks was like something like 0.0 or something, less
one
than
half
1%
of
it,
mm-hmm.
some
right.
little tiny bit, but it was an amount of a huge number.
Right.
So it's not that literal amount of money that's collected that we get.
Yes,
it is. You have to go and ask for it.
Yeah,
I'm just confused on that.
That's
it's laid out that for Parks.
It is laid out, but the commissioners have the county councilors have the opportunity to repass that somewhere else. But
so they can take that REIT and redirect it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. You'll hear it referred to as sweeping REIT for other needs.
Correct.
Sweeping the REIT.
And like Jeff said,
I did not know that could be done, and that's why I'm so perplexed here.
Yeah.
Because I kind of thought that was. I know that we have the Metro Bond, that's on your house tax.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for maintenance, but that's not enough, and that we pull from REIT. But I thought that we got that.
It's kind of like
money.
Well,
it's not automatic.
Do you mind if I take over the whiteboard for a second? I can draw a quick picture of what's happening.
Sure.
With REIT.
It's kind of like I just heard this. I don't know if it's necessarily true, but I just heard this the state of Oregon, they have license plates you can purchase that are like something about owls, or you can personalize license plates, and like a percentage, if you buy this, a percentage of the money actually goes to Parks or fund the owls. Well, I guess Channel 2 did a report, and none of that money went to owls. Zero. So it's just like,
let's be realistic here.
Right.
If they have a pile of money and they start the year, which do you want them to cut? Do you want them to cut the park fees, or do you want them to cut the policeman who's going up and down your street?
No.
Especially since
I'm not arguing what's important. I'm just thinking it's funny when something says it's allocated
towards something.
And then it becomes sidetracked to something
else.
Yeah,
exactly.
But I think it's important that they have that. Not responsibility, but that ability.
Sure.
One quick comment, and correct me if I'm wrong, but REIT can only be used for capital expenses, correct? You cannot use it to pay for ongoing.
That's correct. And with regard to REIT, I think one thing to keep in mind is County Parks doesn't get those funds necessarily dedicated firmly. They are allowed to use those funds on a biannual basis, and the county council has the discretion to direct where those funds go. So while they can, while parks can use REAP, it's not a guaranteed pool of money per se. However, if the economy improves and more money comes into the REAP fund, maybe if the case is made, then, you know, an argument could be said that some should be dedicated, which is a policy question, not a legal.
So here's your REITs. You've got 2008, you've hit a really high point, and then a crash, and it's slowly been recovering. Of all of this, you've got some amount that's a huge chunk of debt that has to be paid regardless. And the commissioners have said we get $300,000 a year, and it's just this flat amount. The problem is areas like right here where your debt's, you know, more or less equal to or more, I don't know what the actual numbers were of your total bills. And even after that, you know, we're out here somewhere. The question is, after, you know, and I should have put it perhaps with another line up here of other departments using this stuff. So, you know, those needs weren't filled back here. And the question is, which needs are going to be filled back?
Right.
So, don't know how much that helps, but
that's true. Makes a lot of sense. But in the planning process, how do we allow for this situation? Do we even bother looking at that? We just say, this is what we would like to do, you know, pie in the sky.
Well, for the capital facilities plan, it's your projection of what you think revenues will be and what your corresponding expenses will be, because you'll have them on. Capital facilities plans don't always get fully envisioned or completed because things change. So, you know, you have a certain amount of projections of what you think the revenues are going to be, and you base what the capital facilities plan expenditures could be, like one neighborhood park in 2017 and a community park in 2018 and, you know, several different trail projects in 2019. And, you know, you figure it all out based on the revenue and what your maintenance budget will continue to be so that you take care of it. But, you know, things happen. And some of those projections may be based on, we got some grant awards in the every other year that RCO is allowing for grants, assuming at the end of 2015 that the federal government reenacts the LWCF, the Land and Water Conservation Act, and we can get more federal funds coming in. And maybe we get awarded that. So there are a lot of assumptions. And some things you can't fully predict accurately because, you know, stuff happens. Mm-hmm. So, but you have to predict a little bit, and it's got to be on your capital facilities plan if you then want to say, we want money for this to all these different agencies that might have money. Because we plan for it, and then they say, oh, you're really thinking about it, you're serious, you know you can take care of it, you know, we can allocate the money. So,
and maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, Gene, but we try to encompass as many opportunities on capital facilities plan, because if it's not identified, then we can't go after grant funds for it.
Yeah.
So even if our target's a little higher than what we probably anticipate, yes. I mean, there's a chance, like John just depicted out, is if our REIT starts climbing back up because the economy's really improving, there's nothing stopping us from going to the council and asking for more REIT funds to help us build parks.
Yeah.
That's always a possibility.
And even though you've allocated it for certain years, you could shift those years to say, whoa, this is, you know, we had a bumper crop here, let's do this sooner. But if you don't have it on there, you're going to have a hard time justifying that it's something you've planned to have an expenditure. So keep this in mind. Even though it's trying to be realistic, it's also going to be very optimistic. Because if it's not on there, you're going to have a hard time justifying going after the money. So, you know, we try to make it very realistic, but you're also going to put some extra stuff in there just to cover it. So
everybody knows
a little bit of dreaming.
You always pass.
A little bit of dreaming is good. So, all right. So next. Oh, and by the way, one of your handout, it went into more detail on that score. It's sort of an exec summary, and when you get the full draft plan, there'll be even more detail. But it has like a little chart showing, you know, how often people are using what types of facilities, and this gets to your question, Greg, about individual sports and team sports and sports fields and how often people are using that. That's that second bar. The third bar is nature-based activities. The first one was walking. So walking, trails, hiking, that sort of thing. Okay, so quick next steps. I don't want to beat you over the head with any more of these stuff. So that's going to be the assessment of, as best we can, because we don't have adopted standards, what's the need and demand for sports fields and for trails. We're not doing a full trail plan, but we want to get a good sense of where were we when the trail plan was completed, and then what direction should we be going in to try to, you know, fill in the gaps and keep moving on progress with trails and, you know, keep fostering its the trail plan implementation. And then another step for one of our next work sessions will be looking at the PIF districts and doing that build-out scenario that we talked about as a follow-up to what's the level of service geographically. Because we did it quantified, of how many acres, of which parks do we need in which districts. We want to look at where should those gaps be filled so that we have that. We've increased some of that public access to parks, trails, open space, et cetera. So we'll do that build-out scenario. It would be nice to have all of your information at that time of where do you live, what parks do you walk to or not walk to, and overlay that if that's possible. And then we'll be working on the capital facilities compilation, drafting together all the information we get and the priorities, and do the draft plan. That's kind of like over the next 4 months. Okay, next. And then as we move on that, we're concurrently going to be trying to engage the public more. Because with all of these issues, if we're going to look for partnerships, if we're going to hash out even more detail on some of these priorities, we want to engage a lot of the stakeholders that may be helping with implementing these or helping establish priorities and helping advocate for retain the REIT that we need for parks or whatever the issue might be. So part of that public engagement, we have created the Mind Mixer site, which I think we shared with you a little bit last time. And on Mind Mixer, you don't have a link to Mind Mixer. Your link didn't work for Mind Mixer. Okay. So Mind Mixer, Steve's here to tell you a little more about Mind Mixer as an online community engagement platform. And we've just started to sketch out the county park system site. And it's going to be a place where people can fill out blogs. So it's in addition to the surveys that will be available on the parks website and on this website, and it will send links out to people. But this is a particular site where you really start to get feedback about, it's like short answer questions, if you remember back to your testing days, rather than multiple choice. The surveys usually are all multiple choice, you know, or matching or numbers or whatever. This is really more of a, you know, what do you like about the parks near your house, or how do you use sports fields, or whatever those types of issues might be. So, oh, you want to write it up? Oh, okay.
That's good.
So this online engagement has listeners. So one of the questions that we want to ask this group is, who would like to be a potential listener? And have your picture on the website that says you are a Parks Advisory Board member and you are interested in what people have to say about parks, trails, and open space and recreational facilities in the county, and you're listening to what they put on the website. And then it will be notifying you of, oh, somebody just wrote a blog on disc golf or, you know, horseback riding trails or whatever. So that you'll be specifically notified instead of just have a link and go up there once a week to check. Or you can be just on the list that we constantly contact and say, here's what the responses have been, here's how many people have looked at the site, given us feedback on the site, given certain likes, all the different ways that social media can interact. I've got a frequently asked questions about Mind Mixer so you can get a little more familiar with it that we'll send out to everybody. Jeremy's got it. He just uploaded it. See, what else can I tell you about? Steve's talking, so.
What about those who don't have access to the or worse yet, don't know how to use it even if they have access to it? Any kind of provision for that?
So you mean general public who can't get to the internet?
Or
library.
Don't know how?
Yeah, if they don't know how. So that's seniors. So they're probably not going to be able to engage on an online form. and they may not be comfortable to engage on an online forum. But in all our open houses, we have comment cards, and those will be staffed, so people can write it down in the good old-fashioned way and get hard copies of what people have to say. And I think there's a phone number as well where you can call up on the parks page. Is there a phone number where you can basically call and say, I have this issue?
Yeah.
So there's other ways. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Mind Mixer, Kelly, do you have a question?
What?
Go ahead, Kelly.
Another plane's coming by. I'm going to check out for.
Okay.
Well, like it's getting in the roar.
He's sitting under the.
I don't know. He's on the flight pattern.
Okay. So, what are you really asking from the membership here? If we would answer questions that come in on the blog,
so,
or acknowledge them, or give feedback, or what?
Yeah. I'll let you.
Yeah, so.
He's the experienced one.
I guess before diving into all the details about Mind Mixer, I just want to reinforce the fact that we're using it as a tool in the public process in addition to all the other tools. So we're looking forward to 3 open houses in early March. We'll have a project webpage available on the county's website. There's going to be standard media announcements coordinating with CBTV for some type of short video segment.
Ooh.
And also using an online platform called Mind Mixer, which is really akin to kind of a combination between Facebook and SurveyMonkey. So it allows people to log in as themselves, and all they really need to do is provide, you know, kind of a username, a zip code, and that's about it, and an age and gender. So that helps us track on the back end kind of more information about the users in terms of their demographics, you know, male, female, where they might live in the county. Because once we use this platform as a means to start asking questions like, what trail connection would you like to link? And, you know, what are your favorite park amenities? And responses start to come through on the back end. We can then aggregate the data and then segment it by geography, by gender, and all the rest. So it's utilized like a survey in that regard, but it's also utilized like a social media site because, again, we can pose questions, again, like, you know, what is the missing link in the trail system? We can have an interactive Google-based map that people can draw on or put pin drops on. And then others, whether it's us as a project team or other members of the public, can respond to those comments. So if Jane Doe says, I really want to see a connection from here to here, some other person who's logged in can say, that's great, but I also think we should do this segment. And it creates kind of that conversation. So that's kind of how we're going to use Mind Mixer in a sense. The other aspect of Mind Mixer is that since the county has a pretty robust list of emails of, you know, past users and people that we send material to, that is really the basis to send out information about not only the site and the project, but subsequent information about come to the public open houses, here are the dates, here are the times. We can send out reminders. We can send out information about the plan draft as it becomes compiled. For example, with the capital facilities plan that Gene's mentioning, we can say, we've started to filter this. Here are some of the key priorities. How does this sound? Is this in line with what you envision? What are the gaps? What are the needs? So it's not just kind of the public process piece, but it's really through the planning process for the whole document that we can utilize this. Coming back to your question of kind of roles, one aspect of the Mind Mixer site is it allows for you to set up these listeners, which are people who are assigned to kind of track the conversation. You don't have to respond to every comment that comes in, but ideally the listeners are, you know, people of prominence, people of familiarity. So whether it's Phil or Jeff or a couple of members of the PAB, it kind of puts a face to the project to say,
any comments that are coming in, people are looking at, and hopefully at least reading, but you also have the potential to write feedback to those people. You can say, yeah, great comment. We look forward to seeing you at the open house or something to that effect. And we'll have protocols, so you don't have to feel like you need to respond to everything, and you don't have to go too far in how much you comment, because sometimes saying too much is a problem. So we'll work with you on the details, but the goal really is to have, you know, one or two PAB members as those listeners. You all certainly can be listeners.
Could it rotate over time so that everyone has an opportunity to do that?
Yeah, I mean, we can add and delete them as necessary, or we can, you can internally assign on a, say, every other week basis, say, it's your turn to do it. That's not
you got your turn in the barrel. And I assume that there is a moderator that checks before things are literally posted.
Yes.
To ensure that those rude comments don't make it.
On that end, that's a more difficult thing to track. Just like Facebook, it's people are putting their comments out there, and I don't know how we would be able to censor or manage that.
You could have like three or more flags.
But it's not anonymous. People are not putting their comments out there anonymously.
Well, that's also something.
They have to register.
Wow.
They have to be responsible.
I don't have any concerns. I just know that the blog that we have in our one group, we took it down because
It's easy.
People think they're So it just
How
would a group like to handle that? How many are interested in being a conversation?
I like the idea of rotating it once a month or something like that. And I'd be more than happy to take a turn at it. I think that would be interesting.
You know, I pretty much kind of do that anyway. So I bought a 4-foot rototiller from Blaine Farm someplace in back east, and I had it shipped out to me. And they're always sending me emails. Someone will post a question on their website saying, hey, does this rototiller work with Category 0? And so I'll get an email saying, hey, would you please answer this? And I'll, you know, this, sure, you know, just quick. Mm-hmm. What it does, so it, you don't even need to have one person. You can just have a, you know, whole list of, like, all of us. Mm-hmm. And it just rotates the question. You know, if there's a question that gets posted.
Or an area of expertise. Like, trails go to Kelly, who's gone.
Right.
Yes. Vote him for,
you know what I'm saying? Where it because that's what they do is, because I'll receive an email about this rototiller, and I, you know, you go to the website and it has, you know, 12 questions that people have answered. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, it just rotates. Because I've done it a couple times, but they also ask other people.
So it sounds like you're open to taking a turn.
I'm definitely willing to have Kelly jump in.
You know, I like the idea of having, you know, like, almost like the whole board be part of the listener type thing. And like was mentioned, if somebody has an expertise in a certain area and wants to comment, to be responsible to routinely be online and answering be a bit much for me probably to commit to.
Right.
But I would warn me, I'm a sports fields advocate big time, and I know a lot about sports fields and synthetic turf and things like that. So if something came up like that, I'd be more than happy to have a listener or somebody say, great, can you respond to this?
And then I would jump in and
make a comment as a member of the board. I'd be more than happy to do that kind of thing.
So Steve, back to you. What's the difficulty factor for you in administering this mind mixer, having multiple, what do you call
mind mixer, mind
listeners versus
mind
whatever versus one or two? What's that?
Honestly, it's not any more complex to set the entire board up as individuals than it would be to set up one or two. So that's not a problem. I think the more interesting thing would be if you want to go the route of individual interests. I can help kind of moderate and tag things for those who have particular interests based on comments that are coming in. And I say, hey, yeah, you know, Greg, go to the site and check out these comments.
If you have the time to do that, that'd be awesome, because then you get specific expertise or people
right.
that know something about a certain area that could really probably benefit that person's question. I mean, you know, they're give them a better answer, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's not recognized searching on keywords of turf or sports fields, you know, Greg, or trails, Kelly.
If I had a list of keywords or key interests of each of the PAD members, which would then be the basis for me to reroute information that people.
How do you notify us? Would we receive an email?
Yes, I would directly send you an email in that case to say you need to log in and.
Oh no! What would mine mail do? Or mind mixers.
Mind mixers.
Just a picture of a hand, right?
Yeah. So I guess there's two different things going on. One is for the PAD to get engaged in particular topics, you can do it one of two ways. One is you individually can follow along to the comments. And it's not like we're going to pose 15 different questions at the same time. We're going to be sequentially building through a series of questions, so maybe one or two questions a week that create the communications online. So then you're just checking out those conversations.
And so the week that we did turf or sports fields, Greg would be the moderator then.
Yeah, I wouldn't
is
be
that what you're saying?
Second. No, it's more of
a listener responder.
Yeah, listener responder. Yes.
Most of the time you don't have to respond.
Exactly.
You're asking a question and you're getting all this input and you're saying, we're listening.
The
listening part may be, ooh, we've got all this stuff, let's have it as a subject to discuss back here at the PAB meeting to see what is the best response, or to be able to say, you know, this is important enough, we want it to be a priority, we can respond by saying, we're making this a priority. Or we can respond by saying, we're putting this in the, you know, the sorting mill for all the priorities, or something, and you don't always have to respond. That's the key thing.
Right.
So this shouldn't be a huge time constraint on all of us. It's just a, here's more stuff where people are getting engaged.
I think it's very much like Facebook in that manner, that you can decide when to engage and when not to engage.
Yeah.
And probably the more you engage, though, the more you get people coming back with additional questions. It kind of builds its own synergy, I suspect, as you go.
Right.
The other big value is you can then, if the conversation is something that you personally really want to advocate for, you can link through your Twitter account and your Facebook account to your 300 to 500 people and get this so it's broader outreach. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do, is get this conversation beyond the focused email list that we might have and make it a broader conversation. So,
what do you suggest that we do for, we want to serve you on this because you're helping us, so you tell us, you're the expert, what's the best way for all of us to be supporting this for you?
Well, I think if there's interest from the whole board that each of you have that listener
and have your picture on them.
Yeah, I can.
That's the part I don't want.
We could get the writing on and use a smile.
That's not the point. I don't want people.
So
when I'm walking down the street to be able to recognize me and connect me in that situation.
Okay.
Because you're going to get.
Yeah, okay.
What is Jane's face?
You can't. I can
see my screen face.
You have to, you have to realize you're going to get a lot of.
Sure.
Unless you can protect it.
Sure. Yeah. In your case, if you don't want your face, then we can take a landscape shot and say, here's your favorite park or
my dog.
Something.
But
bottom line is, it's easy to set it up.
Okay.
All I would need is, some crude information like name and email address and a photo. And then, boom, you're done.
What's your email?
And I think I'll
we'll send stuff to you.
we'll deal with that after the meeting. How's that sound?
Yeah,
include it in a follow-up email.
I've got all your email addresses, so, if you want to just, we can coordinate the thing.
Sure.
That's like we all want to be involved.
That's great.
And that's good.
Happy to hear that.
My problem is we're coming up on the time when we take off. I mean, we're RVers, and so I will not be available a tremendous amount of time.
That's okay. That's actually
that's okay.
That,
no,
we don't have to.
That's
what
we're.
This is part of.
That's
thing.
Why we're a team.
And we don't stay on the computer all the time. Mm-hmm. We don't need yeah, one yeah. with us if we can help it.
Yeah, you're welcome to be checking in while you're driving down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Put a little dish on your RV.
Oh, I have one, but I don't want us to do that.
Okay. Okay. All right. So Mind Mixer is getting up and it's going to get running and we'll get you engaged and
hope it works.
That's really good. Oh, it'll work fine. Steve's running it.
Since I would like to be able to put...
Simplicity is key.
Yeah, but I would like to be able to include my email list. Okay, my email list is going to be a lot better.
That will be great. Absolutely.
And I think awesome. That I don't know if anyone on my list who would object to that.
Okay.
I have lots of people. And okay. The other one I would like to do it with is my husband. But he might kill me. But
we won't sell these email lists to anybody else.
Well, you don't necessarily have to give us those email addresses if you'd be willing
just
to just
forward
share.
Forward.
Yeah,
yes.
Because as a PAB member, you're advocating for
and
parts
you're,
of that.
You're
and that's what we're hoping
something
that
everything comes from
now.
You than something that comes from.
That's
right.
True.
That's what we're hoping our school districts will do for us as well.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes.
So
disseminate when we have an email blast to go out to invite people to say Mind Mixer to participate in the Parks Comp Plan, we can send you that email content and you guys can send it out on your list.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. They said yes. Come on. Come on. Come on.
We have a bigger list. We have a bigger list.
But then be selective. Can be. I wouldn't have the
candies in Clackamas.
Yeah.
Candy.
I'd have to go through a series of authorities to be able
okay.
to distribute two lists.
Okay.
So the just for clarity, I don't mean to get into weeds. Just for clarity, when someone goes to this Mind Mixer website, do they see every park within Southwest Washington or Clark County? And basically, so then you can scroll down to the one, you know, I don't know. Foxtrot Park. I don't even know if there's such a thing. You click it. You can click on it and then add a little information to that, as opposed to I live at Foxtrot Park. You know what I'm saying? There's, you know, it's correlated to each park as opposed to just random blogs or random bits of information, which kind of
It kind of depends on how the initial question is set up. So if the question is more of a poll. What of these five things was the most important to you?
Sure.
It wouldn't have a map associated with it. But if you do a question that requires a map, like what park do you go to the most, or what are your issues with parks? We have basically the Google map that you can zoom in, you can put a pin dot on, and then add content. So it's pretty much what you're talking about.
Okay.
Okay, so I wanted to do just a quick review of our activities that are going on relative to public engagement, the work sessions, 10 to 12 on the fourth Friday of every month for a period of months. You guys have your calendar last month. 12 to 2. Yeah, I was in Central. No. I was in the Midwest. With
You're
my
still
wife.
There.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. That's just a quick summary of what we're going to be moving through over the next 6 months or so, 8 months maybe.
Sure.
Other activities. This is where we're trying to get a lot more face-to-face interactions with stakeholders, with the open houses, and then interviewing possibly some of you for CBTV. Marcia said she doesn't want her face on.
It's not that big of a deal, but in essence, I've done that interview bit before. I could do that. But.
So that's still, the CDTV thing is still in process in
you
terms of.
Channel 12 also, about that kind of thing.
What's that?
Channel 12. Relative to whether or not they can do a production for us or it can be on.
Aren't you putting together some kind of a little something to. Didn't you talk about that before? We're going to put together some kind of a
video?
So we're going to put a video together into YouTube and we can distribute that a lot of ways.
Okay.
So. Mm-hmm. That's
in addition, CBTV would air that on Channel 23.
Yes.
And it's on demand on their website as well, too.
And we can have links to this little video on my Mixer and on the Parks website, Comp Plan website, a lot of different ways.
But you are getting
those video pieces
that you can
use
from the stakeholders, etc.
Oh, yeah, that's stakeholder meetings.
I'm not 100% certain about that. Because I'm not sure I understand the linkages between the communities, et cetera. I think they're the public education portion
access portion. We can certainly ask.
The last little piece that I have before turning it over to anything else that needs to be covered, or turning it over to Barbara, is this whole question, and it came up a little bit with MindMixer about, Steve mentioned to you that we can share protocol with you. In terms of the hat you're wearing when you're in this room and when you're a Parks Advisory Board member is a different hat than you might wear as a spouse or a worker or an employee or a professional or, you know, a baseball player or a motorcycle racer or whatever. We all wear different hats. So the hat that you're wearing in this comprehensive plan, it may require you to behave slightly differently in order maybe not to provoke or antagonize or maybe in some way to fulfill your role as a Parks Advisory Board member. And I'm not sure that I can give you all the different protocol that you should do because each of you, there's a wonderful thing about our country is we all have these great freedoms. But there is a certain responsibility that you have as a member of this board. So as you're being asked to go to neighborhood associations to represent the Parks Advisory Board and NAC meetings and stakeholder meetings and open houses, the question I'm putting to you is, do you want to have some, not quite Robert's Rules of Order, but some basic orientation as to what is the appropriate role and responsibility? You know, how does that hat fit for you as you're doing this, as you're being an advocate for a public park system? Do you feel you need some help with that? I know that as an Urban Forestry Commission member, I was required to go through training on the state's Attorney General site about open meeting training and, you know, basic behavior as an appointed person representing a city in a certain role, wearing a certain hat. When I was a planner in Pennsylvania, I actually taught other planners on planning commissions what the state enabling legislation gave them in terms of a role and responsibility as a planner in their community, as a planning commission member in their community. So I'm throwing this out there in case a few of you aren't used to this kind of public role, or might have challenges separating your advocacy, let's say for Kelly, since he's not here, I can pick on him, his advocacy for trails and his role as Parks Advisory Board member, usually they're the same, but there may be times when, as that board member, he can't say trails are the be-all and end-all and we don't care about parks or sports fields or whatever. That might not be an appropriate voice to express. So I'm throwing this out on the table to see, you know, if I were a fly fisherman, I'd try to get the right fly, and I'd send it out there to see if anybody bites, but I'm really lousy at casting. So
I'm having a hard time getting beyond your first six words, which were, you have to behave.
I like it already, John. That's good.
I would prefer to have some talking points.
Yeah, I was about to say, that would be helpful for me. I'm not sure I really need any training so much, but...
Because I'm not going to be able to get you into a box and down a corral. So talking points are great. I think that's
talking points or a little brochure, or even having some of the resources available that exist, like that discovery guide, those little folder things.
Okay.
Having, if we're going off to a meeting, having a little stack of like the trail map, and you can put it out and people can take one if they want. Having access to those type of standard things that's helpful, right?
Okay.
So if we could maybe put together a box of things that we get, because I don't know what all exists.
And some of these things you already have in your binders. So, but we can get more. And
yeah, I'm just getting a better chance to put on the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right. Because I think, I love that biking guide. My kids use that all the time. So if we had some other resources, what other things would we need to be good advocates?
We want city parks as well. People don't care.
Yeah, do we care? Well, I don't care which park.
You know what I mean? Maybe we could get some. They just updated a couple of their maps, and it would be nice. Because people, you know, especially when they're close to city, county, they use both. They'll go, well, where is the parks down here?
Yeah. If you're jumping in the car anyway.
And all that. Yeah. Maybe some divorce talking points.
Oh, ouch.
We probably should stay away from that, huh? Because that gets just confusing.
Right.
And I can't tell them.
We're living with mom.
The reason we did it we got tired of the city using money we need to take care of their parks.
Yeah. We got our 1.093 alimony check, by the way.
Yeah. We did get our alimony check?
Yeah, it was for the sale of the Schaefer property.
Oh, yeah.
Responsible.
Oh, did you?
We'll talk about that.
Okay. We're rich.
And even questions like, you know, if you go to these open houses, I don't know, I'm kind of, you know, we're basically just asking people questions. I mean, basically, same thing when I met, the first time I met Jeff, it's pretty, you know, we just chatted and just talking about the map. And
that was for the overall comp plan, but there was that parks component. This would be more focused on parks, but it's basically, you know, all the open houses are pretty much the same thing, same structure.
Okay.
It'd be good to have a the capital facilities plan by region. So if we're in an open house in East County, people will be obviously asking what's coming up in around my neighborhood.
Yeah, well, probably when we have the open houses, we won't have the capital facilities plan draft ready.
But there's an existing one, though.
Yeah, there's the old one. Yeah.
And the ability to say, there are plans in this area.
Someday, yeah.
Is there a specific set of questions if we get the opportunity to, say, attend a neighborhood meeting, which I might reach out and do, or my mom's club, reach out to them, that we would go, or just maybe a flyer that lists, go to our Mind
Mixer
site, and every Monday we're going to have a new question there, or something like that?
I think we could put together little information pieces
that
you can hand out that give people links. We could print out the actual survey, although it's much better if they do it electronically because
they
answer it all
the way.
But you better have like all the different links to MindMixer and to the website.
Exactly.
Is there going to be a link to MindMixer on the Clark County Parks website?
That's the idea.
That's the goal.
I think probably just directing them to the Park County website, just kind of funneling them through that would probably be easiest.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in my mind, Leanne, if I have a piece of paper that I give you or have access to, one of these, people retain that. I mean, they'll walk away saying, oh, I know where the park's website is. I need to go there. And then they don't go. If they have that little piece of paper that says, we're working on the comps plan, and there's this site, this site, this site, it looks like, number one, there's more work going on. I don't know if you want to buy into that one, but I always think that looks better. That there's a survey, there's this, this. When they've got that piece of paper, it, in my experience, drives behavior afterwards if they actually go and do it. Instead of saying to themselves, oh, I need to do that when I get home, and then they forget.
Staff can talk a little bit more about this, but I don't see why we could not come up with one quick sheet of
kind of
here's what you really need to do.
Timeline.
Yes.
Sure. I think that's good. Great. All right. Okay, great. That would be a good update. Do you guys still have your calendars with you?
Sure.
Because there's some updates on the open house. One day move and the locations. Jeff has all of that.
Anything that's the paper and the
work. I don't
have that in my email.
I mean, we can send it out as an email if that works better for everybody.
Paper and
email. Yeah, I wasn't.
Roll it on down.
Okay. Greg doesn't have that.
The calendar, the pre-printed calendar you had before had February 25th as a day for an open house. We had to move that because we couldn't find any room that we could use and get. So the first, we're going to have three in a row, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the first week of March. The first one will be Tuesday, March 3rd at the Le Center Community Center. And the address will be in your email, but just so everybody knows. Time is open to the public from 5 p.m. to 7. I'll be there at 4:30 to start setting up, and we'll probably be out of there by about 7:30 after taking everything down and putting it back in the vehicles.
The
Center Community Center.
But you will give me an actual address so I can find
it. It'll be in the email.
Oh, okay.
Wednesday, March 4th,
will be in the Camas Washougal Fire Station. That we had to move from the C-Tran place in Fisher's Landing, but Camas Washougal Fire Station will be where it's at. And that will also be, all these are the same time, so 5 to 7 is when we're going to be available to the public. And Thursday, March 5th, will be the Three Creeks Library, and that's the one right near Fred Meyer up there off Tenney. Everybody knows where that is. And those will all be the same time. So we got all those rooms for free of charge, and they're going to lock up for us and all that.
Great. Thank you.
Has been no changes?
Yeah, so just the one.
Random question. The aspect that I have, I think I can bring to the table is I really like the linking of the other nonprofits together to accomplish things. Just like you were originally saying in this SCORE plan, that was just about basically networking and getting people to buy in. I mean, is there someone with the county that their job is to approach these organizations? I mean, going to, like REI has foundations, you know, going to some of these other organizations and say, hey, look, you know, we'd like to partner with you to create, you know, here's a piece of chunk of our land that maybe the county and a public entity can purchase together. You know, is there someone that actually has that position?
Not right now.
Well,
Pat Lee with Columbia Land Trust.
Pat Lee would,
in
yes.
his program, he, or actually...
Or that aggressively does that.
When we're targeting an acquisition, when a county's targeting an acquisition, they can partner with an entity like Columbia Land Trust who can basically front either the funding and secure the acquisition when the county knows that it's going to have other funding coming in and basically they can transfer that. So there are partnerships for acquisition that are used sometimes. I don't know if there are too many partnerships for development, but a little bit with like Miracle Softball Group. So in smaller pieces, there are partnerships for development. I think the biggest place where there are partnerships are for volunteer programs, getting a lot of different entities, nonprofits, et cetera, doing stuff
right.
that help with maintenance and sometimes help with a little bit of either a capital improvement or a capital repair or operations of a place like Camp Louisville or Camp Hope, as it's called now, and things like that. But increasing the level of partnership engagement and building it is something the county is trying to participate in now relative to, I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Intertwine, but Bill and Jeremy have started going with attending the meetings for the sort of the Clark County contingent of nonprofits and park and rec providers and folks that are interested in promoting and facilitating the needs for parks, trails, and open space, you know, our access to nature. Did you want to share any of that sort of movement and what's going on with that?
Yeah, I attended my first meeting, and actually Kelly was instrumental in trying to get me engaged, and pretty busy last year. But with the Intertwine, it is just this coalition of different groups that are coming together, a consortium of sorts, and with the intention of trying to promote, you know, outdoor recreation, partnerships, you know, opportunities to share resources. There's a whole myriad of different things that the Intertwine Commission takes care of, and I'm still learning it myself. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty new to this game, and so I've got another meeting scheduled with them next week, and so there's going to be somewhat of a charrette coming up or
a networking event
coming up, and so as that unfolds, then I will definitely be sharing that with you and see if you want to engage with some of that.
And we can also share with them what we're doing and where we are and use them as another sort of outreach source for, because it's like Columbia Springs Environmental Education Center and Vancouver Watershed Alliance mm-hmm. and Columbia Land Trust and those types of sort of nonprofit or environmental entities and trail groups, they're active in it. And so that's sort of another target for our outreach.
Right. So well, I was thinking more on the lines of someone that has large amounts of capital.
Like private sector.
Yeah, private sector. Yeah, that kind of thing where it's...
Not really. We don't really have staff that are actually, you know, assigned to go out and do that. It's essentially down to us to make that happen. And so we haven't realized what our true staffing needs will be when it comes to doing that kind of work. We may have to actually hire that out. I don't know. But the one thing I'm very concerned about is once the capital facilities plan is completed, we're going to have to actually, you know, act on it, go out and start actively looking for properties and looking for resources to afford those properties outside of PIT. And so that's where the partnerships are going to come in handy. And in fact, Jeff and I were just talking to a gentleman yesterday and today that lives close to Curtin Creek, and he was asking all these different questions. How much is it going to take to get this park open and functional? And then he finally came back with why. He owns a large property adjacent to that property, and he wants to leave a legacy. So he's talking about donating a share of money towards the development of that park. So, I mean, those opportunities are just golden to us,
right.
You know, but to actually reach out to folks, that's what we need to work on. That's where we're weak right now. So.
Yeah. And just to add to that for a little clarification, Adam, because I've been involved in a lot of outreach for grants and stuff, and it's kind of interesting because as far as the county or any governmental agency being the initiator and reaching out and asking for money, in a lot of cases in your public foundations, such as what you're referring to, they won't take anything from big government, which, sorry, that's what you are. They look for groups like the Parks Foundation is really the emissary that reaches out on their behalf.
Okay.
Or like your Phillida Neighborhood Association has been very active in securing like your Nutter Foundation grants for some of their park and partnerships with other neighborhoods. So it's usually those organizations that they accept it. But if you read the Fred Meyer Foundation, I went through it, and I thought I had to go through the county, and you read it, they won't even take anything from it. They say, no, government's got their own money. They're not spending mine. But they will work with a neighborhood association or any other type thing to get dollars.
Interesting.
So you have to look. And then there are other places where you have to, like Parks Foundation requires that it work with you. They won't give us the money directly for a park. So you got to look at all those rules, but okay. I've never seen one where on that side.
Sure.
We've had a couple opportunities where the Walton Family Foundation has come to us asking, and that Jim brought it up, and, you know, through our volunteer program, that links us to money indirectly. So the Walton Family approached us. They were building a brand new Walmart out in Battleground, and they wanted this big volunteer project that not only could they, you know, engage their employees on, but to donate money towards. And so that's kind of a segue into, you know, asking for more money down the road.
Right.
But, you know, what Barbara says is true, you know, for the most part. But they do look towards foundations. You know, they are looking for outlets. There's a lot of deep pockets out there that we can tap into, you know, one way or the other. But it's just a matter of making those contacts.
Right.
And through our Parks Foundation, Sherry Martin is probably one of our best avenues. Yeah. So.
So I don't think I have anything else I need to cover.
I have one thing real quick on CVTV. We've had a false start with CVTV, but I think we're back on track working with them to get a program that would begin airing in middle of February, which is really good for our timelines in terms of bringing Mind Mixer on board our open houses in early March. I was wondering if there was a member of the Parks Advisory Board who would like to participate in a CVTV piece if that opportunity is open. And I have yet to even meet with CVTV. Barbara, it just looks like you were nominated this way.
I second.
No.
There are more.
We have a non-voting member second.
Kelly,
I would be the second one. Yes.
I always put my thumb in my nose when I have to have my picture taken. So there.
What I see, what would be very valuable from my perspective for a PAB member to do, and Adam just volunteered, he said it very softly, but he did volunteer, is to simply talk about why parks are important to you. Mm-hmm. The most personal approach you could give to this program, I think it's going to have the more powerful impact on people.
Let's have some little kids tell you. They think things much better.
No, I'm thinking on-camera interview. Oh, yeah. No, it would not be exceptionally long.
Real short.
Yes.
It's part of the
You get a couple of bites of the apple, and then they cut to something else.
John, you should do it.
He just
said, yeah, John.
I'll do it.
Yeah, John.
If you need, I thought
great. Yeah, there you go.
No, I thought it was just like scanning video, you know, video you ride a horse or something.
Are you going to bring your trusty steed and
sure.
ride by and back? That'd be
I'll help you on the other end, like going out to the other places, but take my picture.
Drive a tractor. Yeah.
Since you asked that question, I wonder if maybe a school representative could share why it's important that parks and schools have relationships, and why are parks important to schools and education?
Maybe one of our school representatives would like to volunteer.
Not to put anybody on the spot.
Scripted and such?
Yeah, scripted.
Sure. I don't mind.
You know, it's a and how parks are...
Sure.
I have two names.
It has to be truthful.
We'll put together sort of the theme and the rough script and what the question would be. So, yeah, do it. Yeah,
yeah,
won't be too
candid.
But you have to
learn
to smile fast.
You just don't want me talking off the top of my head.
No, no, no.
And how the aviation industry needs, you know, good parks to land in.
That happened to
us. Right.
As we're almost 2 o'clock, so we've got to get on.
I think we're. Barbara, did you want to do the?
Yeah, I'm going to rock it through that now.
Okay. Good, okay.
What we've got here is Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. This is Barbara's neighborhood.
And she's got a sweater on.
It's not a party. This is something that Kelly and I discussed, and for a couple of different reasons, it seems like a good idea for us to start sharing some of the things. We've had a lot of comments about, oh, there's too many parks, there's not enough parks, there's this, that, you know, from our little perspective. And we got to thinking that a lot of it comes from, why are you really here? What do you represent? What biases or groups do you really represent? We bring a lot of our personal garbage with us when we come here, even though we try to be, you know, open. So we thought if each member took a few minutes and identified a little bit about you and your neighborhood and your interaction with the parks and facilities that are available. So he said, I got to go first, so this is me. I'm Barbara Anderson, and I live at 105 Northeast 150th in Vancouver. And you can see the little mark of me right there off of 149. Ripple Creek Place is the homeowners association that I live in. It's a development of about 314 homes, and it's all squeezed into a couple of blocks from 2nd Avenue on Northeast 2nd down to Northwest 9th and from 149 to 153rd here. You'll see that there's a huge greenway area in here. It's very densely populated. This makes it look like we've got a lot of open space, which sort of we do, but that's Whipple Creek. And so that's why we're called Whipple Creek Place. It very much meets the density desires that Clark County pushed on it. When I built my house here in 2004, I actually wanted to purchase the lot across the street from me, which was much bigger. Next slide. Because this is my house. And you can see the huge yard I've got. The reason I moved up here was I wanted to be close to my grandkids. My backyard isn't very much bigger than that, folks. I can't even put a swing set in the backyard. And my house isn't any different than anyone else. It's what I call your standard kicky-tacky, where everybody's house is kind of the same. So everybody's squeezed in. Our builder got all these little extra gimmies from the county by shrinking the lots down and getting the density in here. Next one. And on top of the existing density, I mean, you look at this. This is looking down on my little stoop there. And you can see no backyards, no front yards. Okay? We've got two new housing developments that are going in the little tiny bits of free space that there actually are that are buildable in our neighborhood. And so the density continues. Now, when you start looking at living in, I tease with my neighbor that if I need toilet paper, I can throw it into my bathroom window. You know, I just kind of call out. Because you can see how close the houses are. And the builder would not sell me the larger lot that's over here because he wanted to put one of those 3,400 square foot houses in there. He said I had to have at least 3,000 square feet to get the bigger lot. I don't need that as a single person. So I could not get the size of lot to let my grandchildren play. When you look at this density that's already there and the issues that are common to homes that are shoved close together, I see a lot of it. And that's because we have a very diverse neighborhood with a wide variety of religious and ethnic backgrounds in it. We have a really huge socioeconomic stratification because on one end of the housing development are these great big huge custom-built homes. And then at the back side of it, you've got these little tiny patio homes with nothing, and then everything in between. We've got some singles, but there is a huge population of children of all ages in the neighborhood. And it also encompasses, there's a group of us empty nesters, or seniors, or retirees, that live there as well. Well, in 314 homes packed together, there's diversity is the word. And I started sitting on the HOA board there because of some of the needs that were identified in the community. And I have to say that RE complaints are fairly typical. I went to NUSA, which is your neighborhood associations for the United States, and talking with those people, everybody seems to deal with the same thing. People complaining about people parking, children playing in the streets, issues about basketball hoops and the noise of children. I mean, these sound like things that are part of living. But I have to tell you, you get conflict going that is unimaginable, that gets brought to you as a neighborhood board member for a solution. And I'm probably not the right one to ask on that one because you all know my issues. We have a walking trail throughout the development, and we have a small park in there. It was one of the big selling features. It's a half acre park, but it's got one play structure on it, this one, and then two of these little horsey things on the spring. That's it. Still, we are kids in my neighborhood because we will not let the neighbors across the street come hiding. But they want to post it private property. You don't let her go away. And it gets discussed all the time. So we're talking about putting some of these exercise stations in our trails. Two of the members at the last board meeting voiced concern that neighbors walking on our sidewalks might use them. We're piggies, but that's okay. It's not an uncommon attitude.
That's typical.
We also encompass about 25 acres of the Whipple Creek wetland and habitat as a buffer. So we really are fortunate in having that, except, want to know something? You can't walk on it. It's got endangered species. So we get to fence it off and we spend anywhere from $7,000 to $40,000 a year to maintain that wetland habitat. That's what most of our homeowners' dues go for. Next one. Well, part of my interest came about with parks when they sent out a notification that the North Salmon Creek Neighborhood Association was going to be reinvigorated because we were going to get a park, Snoop Park. And they wanted a neighborhood named Clark County likes to interact with neighborhoods. So we had been meeting down at Three Creeks Library to get the bigger neighborhood active again. And I became a board member for that. This is the outline of it. Whipple Creek Graveside Forgiveness Neighborhood Association. For the county, there are 29 of them in the unincorporated area. The city of Vancouver has 66, but they're a little big. Because you can see that this runs from 163rd down to Salmon Creek, from I-5 over to Northwest 43rd. Okay, in that area, there's about just under 18,000 people. And our neighborhood got busy because we thought we were going to get a park. And that was really exciting to us. Now, when you look at it, the population density that I referred to really is steady down through here. But you get up into here, and you can see that there isn't a whole lot. There's a lot of growth that's going to come there. Our population hasn't hit. That's still very urban out there. Next slide. So I got involved because I really wanted this neighborhood park. Part of it is because as an HOA, we have rules that say no basketball hoops. Your kids can't play in the streets. I mean, there's just all these terrible rules. And I've never been one of you. You've all heard me say this. I don't think children should play in the streets. I really don't. But if they have no other place to go, what are they going to do? Children need a place to play. So I was really ecstatic about us getting this park. But the problem was is that when you look at it, this is what the park ended up with. But this right up here is 7th Avenue. I'll show you in a minute. This was the area at first designated for it. When we went in there, you can see it's really not buildable. So they had to look for some adjacent property where they could actually put the play area. Okay? And so we were really waiting a long time. Well, from a neighborhood perspective and our interaction with the county, we took a look at this, and they said that they couldn't build it here, and they had to look for more property for us. We brought our perspective, and we said, even though in all of that North Santa Cruz Neighborhood Association, there was not one park, not one park, not one county park. We did have Chinook Elementary and Santa Creek Elementary Schools, where we had made an agreement and spent some money building out soccer fields for the kids to practice on. And of course, our children could go there after school, but it really was a play area that they could go to. We do have HB Fuller Park, but that's a private park with an agreement in place for maintenance. So when we looked at that, we looked at how our map, could you go back one? When we looked at our map, you would see that, let's see here. Yeah, we get this one 39.
Yeah.
Okay, HB Fuller would be about here. And then your school would be here and your school would be here. So when you look at it, these down here were serviced. But the people up in here, like in my neighborhood here, they couldn't get to it. Part of it is, okay, back to the next one. Part of it was is that we're a landlocked area. If you don't go in on 10th Avenue, you have to go all the way down to Northwest 21st. That's what I call landlocked. So putting the park where they did down here, we said, well, Fuller Park is right here. Chinook Park is here. The school is here. The Santa Street is down over here. We really needed the play area to be back here. Well, long story short, it was still a good thing because it's a beautiful park and we love it. But,
and it provides connectivity
through on the Little Creek Freeway. Lots of pluses, but it's still left, from my perspective, a service game. Okay, for a neighborhood park. Next one. For me, other groups that I align with, and the biases I bring to the table, is I belong to the Moms Club because you all know that I am helping raise my twin grandchildren. And our play groups from the Moms Club are very active in parks. During the nice weather, we're there at least 2 days a week. I mean, at parks. And so we've gone to a lot of the different parks around
kids also do t-ball right here. They play soccer at Fuller. And then there's always the neighborhood gatherings at our parks. Unfortunately, I now fully own the fact that I am disabled. I broke my back when I was early 30s and was paralyzed for 10 days, so I'm happy to hobble around. But I bring a vision that's a little bit different, because no matter, it used to be if you could just charter, you could do it, and then you can't. So your view is different, and that expands out, because I have an alignment with people that have mobility issues. But I know for a fact I need to look at other disabilities when I'm looking at parks. You know, especially children on the autism scale have very unique needs. And so, yeah, okay, don't get me harp on that sometimes. And that's because it's close to me. That we need to care for these people that get left out too darn much. Next one. So first, you had my neighborhood. Then you had the neighborhood association. Well, I'm also part of Park District 10, which we're all familiar with, but it's not in there. Next slide. So the existing and planned play areas in Park District 10 is, as I mentioned, we've got the two schools and Fuller. None of those are really Clark County parks. We now have our new Chinook Park. We have Vista Meadows that was built out, I think, in 2006. But Lama Vista is on hold. Salmon Creek Community on hold. So it's not like we haven't been looked at and identified that there are needs. But these have been on hold for a long time. We do have our Fairgrounds Community Park, which is very popular, and our Whipple Creek Regional Park next. And in alignment to where I live just about here. Here's our Chinook Park. Here is the H.B. Fuller. There's where that Camp Cozy proposal neighborhood park will be. Here's where that Salmon Creek proposed park will be. And then the Whipple Creek Trailhead, just a tiny quarter that is in our neighborhood, in our park district. And then the Salmon Creek Greenway runs through it. So you can see that it appears that there's lots of green there. So why do you always hear me whining that we've got no place to go? And that's because when you look at Chinook, they do a notify of a half mile for a neighborhood park, right? Here's what that lays out to be, where the mailing was. Is the eye right up there? Absolute corner of the half mile to get there. Next one. So Chinook Neighborhood Park is located between 139 and 149. And it's east of Skyview. For someone who knows the neighborhood, you gotta kind of wind your way around. After you find it the first time, it's okay. But it was hard to find the first time. Now, I have to say, I can't walk very well. I can't walk that half mile to the park. But I do drive there. I go to parks all the time. But I drive, and this first entry to the Chinook Park is 0.6 miles from my house. To get right to this park. And then you look on down here and you see that that's this bridge down there. And then you got a wandering way. Beautiful. I used to do a lot of backpacking. I can't do it now, and I don't want that. It's too far. Next one. So I go around to the other side, and first of all, I will tell you, you see right here that there's that deadhead for emergency vehicles. And really, people aren't supposed to park across here. Well, I'm saying this is a big year. Well, we don't know. Used to put big cones up there so that you couldn't park there. And since he was told you can't do that, he now has to shove the basketball hoop up there so you can't park in front of his house. So if you're over there and you've got an issue trying to find a place to park, and the neighborhood park doesn't have parking, so anyway, but I gotta tell you, those people right there, they're different. Because our kids are going to go to this park and they look for people with us. We're there, it's full. Okay? So it's heavily used, people love it. We're glad to have it. It's not everybody's trying to discourage. Well used park. But for me, if I go down 21st to get there, it's 2.1 miles. Oh no, that's if I go via 10. 2.5 if I go down to 21st. That's a drive to get to this point. So, walkable neighborhood park? Not really. For the people that are down here, 139th, yes. This end of the park, yes. It is walkable. But for the people on the north end in my area, no. I will tell you, Vista Meadows is one that our neighborhood and moms group has got to. And you've heard me say this before. They came in and they put a bioswale type thing in their front of it. And if you've got little kids, I don't care if it's only that deep. We don't go play here anymore. But it's about 4.7 miles from my house. Next one. Fairgrounds, we love, love, love this park. My grandkids. And we go here all the time. My advocacy with the moms group, guess what? Guess who adopted that park this year? And we go twice a month to do cleanups there. It's only 1.9 miles from my home. And I will tell you, we spend a lot of time here in the summer. The biggest problem there is it gets pretty hot. We'd love to see a splash area there. A Whipple Creek Regional Park. Love to hike in here, lots of opportunity. And this is near me. We have a very large horse population down off of 21st. They love this. Strong advocacy there. Lots and lots of volunteer hours from our neighbors supporting this. So even though I don't ride a horse, you might hear me bringing about some needs for these people because they're part of my neighborhood too. And it's only 2 miles from my door to get there. And if I hiked, I would sure still be on that because it's gorgeous. Next one. So, in summary, I've got a lot of parks around me. It's part of why I love Vancouver. We go to the park constantly. And that's because I found with kids, you got to get them out making time. Parks are the best place to do that. And I bring a lot of biases to the table, but I think they're good ones that represent not just my needs, because I don't walk well, I don't get out very much, but I care because the kids in my neighborhood, literally, I don't care how much it looks like we've got. They don't have a safe place that they can walk to and play in their own neighborhood. And we really do need that out there. So even though it looks like we got a lot, you'll still hear me complain that we need that other neighborhood. And I know that Pete Mayer was looking for it, and then he left. And then Pete Capel says, well, hold that thought. And then he left. And it's been transitioned. And so even though the need was not denied, it's not been fulfilled. We're hoping one or two of you will be volunteering to do something similar about your neighborhood and your viewpoints for our next meeting.
Mine is so different. There's no way I'm going
to
do that.
Well, you don't have to do it that way. Just do what's comfortable for you.
Tell us. Do you go to a park?
I'm going to.
Yeah. Okay.
So tell us.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you all. Work session over.
We're adjourned.
We're adjourned.
Back in there.
I got the school bus.
We may want to stay for a second.
Robert, you got issues, girl.
Well, thank you for joining us,
I know. I never thought.